Welcome back to the Ojogo Bonita podcast with your host, J-Cron. We've got the usual panel of Mr. Ferguson and Mr. Jennings. Welcome back, guys.
Hello, hello. We're very impressed. We're absolutely whizzing through things this morning. We've got a tight schedule and lots to talk about, so very excited to see what's coming up.
Absolutely. First week of fixtures is done. Round one, as it were, is over. Thoughts, JK?
I've had an absolute well of a time with the predictions.
We all have. I've got the results of the predictions up here. I can reveal that Mr. Jennings not only won, but basically trounces on the first day, getting both of the correct scores in Group A with two away 2-0 wins, and then further cementing it with a correct 1-0 Switzerland-Cameroon prediction. So he finished on 14 points, although it's slightly telling that he had the most correct predictions of all of us with half of them. We've had collective stinkers this week.
Yeah.
J-Caron, you were beating me until the last match of the match day, when I got the correct score in the Brazil-Serbia match and just pipped you to second place. So
no one remembers second place anyway.
No, exactly.
Unfortunately, I predicted an Iran win against England, and I got that horribly wrong. I predicted a Cameroon win. Switzerland won. I predicted a Croatia win. No.
I was surprised how many 0-0s there were, actually.
I
thought that players would come into this fly. I thought there'd be more creative players coming into this in form, and I thought there'd be more defences that were disorganised. But credit to the coaches. There's been a lot of really, really top-notch defending this tournament so far. Obviously not from Costa Rica, but
yeah, they're the worst team in the competition, aren't they?
Worst in Qatar?
I'll say
Qatar had a good second half, I thought, against Ecuador. I thought they were absolutely awful in the first half. But I've come in with notes this week because there's been so much football. And on my notes, I've written that Qatar definitely improved in the second half.
Definitely.
Oh, what a game Enner Valencia had.
Oh, I mean, it's in these games, isn't it, when you look at the personnel, and this is where I think it is. Outstanding individual performance does play a part in international football. And you look at that lineup in that first fixture and you see Enner Valencia on there, and alongside Casado in midfield as well, just a couple of standout names. Enner Valencia was head and shoulders
above
everybody else on the pitch, wasn't he?
There were a few standout performances from the match day in general.
Yeah.
I thought Federico Valverde, you know, although Uruguay didn't win, I thought he was
the best player
on the pitch, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
He was absolutely immense in midfield.
Definitely.
In fact, it felt like he was playing defence and attack as well. He was that good.
Yeah.
That's what he does for Real Madrid on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
He plays on the right as a false winger. He covers central midfield and he covers right back. So he can actually play throughout the right-hand side, which is, I think, when Real Madrid do try and get Jude Bellingham, and I do back them to get him.
Yeah.
I think that having a midfield of Bellingham, Tchouameni, Camavinga, Modric, Kroos, and Valverde, one of the best midfielders in the world.
I will say that may not be as likely as it once was, given the news about the Glazers. Now the Glazers have sold. If there is money coming into Manchester United, if it is coming in soon, I think Jude Bellingham would be the kind of impact statement signing that they would want to make. Maybe they'd go for who's the striker they keep on being linked with?
Osimhen,
yeah. But I think they'd go for Bellingham for the publicity of it, because he's English coming back to an English club. I think that's a real possibility if a sale gets done before the summer window, at least. I don't think Bellingham will go in January.
It's interesting times, isn't it? A really good point was made on a radio station or an article that I read a couple of days ago now, where they spoke about this potential sale, and the point was made that it's highly likely that this is further down the garden path than actually any of us really, you know, would expect. And the narrative was used that if you're going to sell something, well, you usually go and speak to people first about the potential sale of it rather than going public straight away. And that's just logical, right? So I suspect that there will be a selection, a portfolio, if you like, of potential buyers already being discussed at the table. And this publicity stunt now by the Glazers to say, look, we're going to be selling the club, is potentially just there to try and now kickstart a bit of a discussion around the value of that club. There is no doubt in my mind, Manchester United Football Club is the biggest sports brand in the world.
And what other club would be taking attention away from the World Cup like this?
Absolutely.
And two things to further on to that point.
Yeah.
One, they did it the same day that they announced they were releasing Cristiano Ronaldo.
Huge.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Two, coming back to what you're talking about already having buyers being discussed, you know, over the summer, we already heard from Sir Jim Ratcliffe. We already heard even from Elon Musk, you know, possibly as a joke tweet, but with the news now, that almost feels like no smoke without fire.
And Sir Jim Ratcliffe did turn around and say, didn't he, that, you know, I'm now going to be withdrawing my bid. I don't think a bid was tabled, but the narrative was something along the lines of I'm now no longer going to be in for buying Man United. And at the time, that felt like the Glazers have put their foot down and said they're not selling. Actually, now I think it's possibly something else, in that actually maybe he does not have the financial backing. I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe is a very wealthy man, but I think he would need a consortium behind him. I think he would need investors to help his bid. Perhaps there's been some further developments there when actually he's just actually stepping away and saying, do you know what, actually I can't compete with the money that's being spoken about here. And just to reiterate my point about the brand of Manchester United Football Club and why I think it's the biggest sports brand in the world, I don't think we can look too much beyond football. I mean, the Denver Broncos sold for, I think it was 3 million.
I think it was 4 point something.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was that dollars or was it?
That was I think it was $4.7 million, I want to say.
Billion.
Yeah, absolutely. And short change if you're in the football world. But so that as a comparative point, Real Madrid and Barcelona, in terms of their structure, means that they cannot be sold and valued in the same way. They cannot be sold on an international scale like Manchester United Football Club can. And so you then look at other teams in a similar ballpark to Manchester United. I think of the likes of Liverpool, Bayern Munich, for example, just to name two. And neither of those have got the international pull that Manchester United has, that international recognition. So what will it sell for? Well, I'm no way a financial expert, but I suspect we will see something between 6 to 8 billion.
I will also, I'll give credit to the Glazers where it's due. Announcing this a couple of weeks after Fenway Sports Group have announced they're selling Liverpool.
Absolutely.
Any bidders who are potentially in for Liverpool now who weren't already in for United are thinking, well, hang on, Manchester United, I feel we are obviously biased as a panel of three Manchester United supporters, but they are a bigger club. Historically and in terms of commercial value as well, they are so much bigger than anyone else except maybe Barcelona.
Yeah, and if you think about the Premier League, the Premier League is the European Super League, right?
Mm.
And if we think about the attempts that we've seen in recent past to try and build a European league that takes the very best from across those leagues as well, when that fell away, you looked at these American owners and thought, you know what? That's possibly going to be a bit of a kick in the teeth for them, and perhaps we'll see them start to retract. And that does feel like it's what's happening. But you know, Liverpool, Man United, no doubt in my mind, the two biggest clubs in the country. And I think where we see what Manchester United has done in terms of its impact and the growth of the fan base internationally is really to do with their success during the Premier League era. And certainly in those earlier years as well, and it's just so widely regarded as being, you know, the best team in the country. So exciting times, turbulent 24 hours for Man United fans a couple of days ago, but I dare say that there is the sun is on the horizon here, and let's see what happens over the coming weeks.
I think Liverpool will be half the price of Man United, so if United are valued at 6, Liverpool will be worth 3 billion.
But Liverpool are worth more than Chelsea, surely.
I think Chelsea was two and a half, but that was plus debts. And again, as I said, not financial experts. Probably good to interview one if we could get one on the podcast. Football finance expert, maybe from the CIS or Transfermarkt.
Mr. Adams, I think economics teacher at the school, big Arsenal fan. That's a plug for you, sir. We're coming for you.
Just to touch back on Jude Bellingham. Great performance against Iran. I believe the England team were really good. But it was Iran at the end of the day. And one thing I will say, here's an option. Mehdi Taremi as United's January striker signing. What are we saying?
It's not a bad idea, I don't think. I did watch him and I thought he was obviously a class above most of the around team. You're right, I thought Bellingham... in my notes, I've got Bellingham sensational in all aspects. His running, his tackling, his passing, his goal. He was incredible. He was one of the standout performances in match day one, along with terrifyingly Kylian Mbappe, who was, until Australia scored, was a little bit slow. As soon as Australia scored, oh my word, terrifying. But yeah, Bellingham was great. Mehdi Taremi, I thought he took his goal really, really well. I thought his penalty was dreadful. It was an awful penalty. If he's a fan of the club, then yes, I'm in for that. I thought the Odionigalo signing was fantastic because he was passionate about the club and he would always give 110%. And it's a crying shame that it didn't quite work out as well as it could have done when we saw that Europa League goal he scored and thought, oh my word, here we go, in the words of Fabrizio Romano. But I think he'd be too expensive if he's not a fan.
I'll challenge you. I'm not convinced. And the reason I say that is because if you look at Ener Valencia's performance for Ecuador against the Qatarians in the opening game, you had a player there that was clearly head and shoulders above everybody else on the pitch. Outstanding performance, should have had a hat trick. No idea how the penalty decision doesn't get that decision in the early stage of the game. Mm. But I just see that this is at the World Cup. We're going to see these situations, right, where big fish and small ponds stand out. And I just don't think he's, with the greatest respect yet, I may be proven wrong as the competition goes on. I can't say I've ever watched him play before, but I'm reserving judgment, I think, on that front until I see a little bit more of him. I suspect he will not be the sort of player that Man United will look at.
Can I throw a name into the hat then?
Yes.
Because I want to throw in Mikel Antonio.
Interesting.
I had the pleasure of watching him while he was at Sheffield Wednesday. I saw him on one match day. And he scored two goals to drag Wednesday into a 3-2 victory. And he was a class apart from everyone else on that pitch. Admittedly, it was a championship game. I don't think it was a League One game at the time. But he was absolutely incredible. And he went to West Ham and he proved that he was incredible. And he seems to not really be anywhere this season. And that surprised me because he has got so much quality. And if he's not being used somewhere else, I actually think there might be a good cut price deal to be had there, especially as he's not had a showing in the World Cup. Everyone in the World Cup is going to get inflated prices. I think because he's not there, I think there's potential to get something done cheaply, especially if he wants game time as well. Mm. Now that United don't have a number nine or number seven, I think that, and you can't rely on Martial, sadly, to be fit all season.
No.
Which leaves possibly Rashford up top, but then you've got Garnacho and Anthony Sancho, hopefully when he gets back into form, but you've not got much cover up top.
I think we'll do one or two things. I think you'll see something like a Gakpo signing. 50 million will come in as to be what is just another attacker, and you'll probably see Rashford go and play as the number nine for the season.
Mm. I watched the second half of the Senegal-Netherlands game, I thought Gakpo did look like the best player on that pitch. It wasn't so clear-cut as the Bellingham situation, for example.
No.
But he was the best player there.
Sure, young player. So that I think that's one option. The other option is you'll see a short-term deal for somebody like Memphis Depay to come in and do 6 months. Is what I would hang my hat on at the moment. I don't know what else we'll do. And I think the points you've made already around potential investment now and looking towards the summer, obviously the Ronaldo departure does mean that we are now really lacking in that attacking sense, in that final third central role. But I don't know who else we'd look at in the short term. I've got some names which I can share maybe next week in terms of who I think they're looking at. But for long-term solutions, I think JK has already offered one of those in Ozenhain. But yeah, interesting. Predictions?
Just before, one last player I want to throw in the hat.
Sure.
Terem Moffi, as you saw me search him up, of Lorient. He's got 9 goals this season in Ligue 1. He is a not quite target man, but can run in behind.
A modern target man.
Yes. I like the look of him. I watched a little bit of Lorient against PSG, and he looks like a decent player. I've watched a few highlight clips, etc. So
if it was a long-term project, I think they'd go for. They might consider him.
Mm.
I think because they need someone short-term to come in and be effective, I think they'll want someone with Premier League pedigree. Yeah. Is my drawback on him personally.
He's only 23 as well, so
yeah, but I think that suits a long-term project more than it suits an emergency cover signing in January.
Any thoughts on from your notes regarding João Félix against Ghana?
There's a lot of matches I didn't get round to seeing. And I'm sure I'll get onto those in a minute, but I'm aware that Mr. Jennings will have to dart off quickly, and I do want to get his predictions in before he has to run away. And if he's got any notes, then he can, email them to me, Slack them to me.
Sure.
Pigeon carry them to me.
Right.
What have you got? Have you got ink and quill?
Yeah. I've got an email.
Predictions. Let's start you off, Mr. Jennings. Wales, Iran.
Yeah, Wales have got this. I'm confident. Shocking first half from Wales. Absolutely horrendous. One of the worst performances so far in a half football we've seen during this competition. Made the USA look a hell of a lot better than they are. Wales will beat Iran comfortably. Iran have lost their best player, which is their goalkeeper. And I, if he's not fit, I can see this playing into their hands. I will go... I tell you what I'll do is I will go 3-1 Wales. I think Iran will have to go for it.
I'm going to go 2-1 Wales.
I've got 3-0. I've got all my predictions ready to go, so I'm quick off the mark this time.
Brilliant.
Mr. Ferguson, start us off with Qatar, Senegal, please.
3-0 Senegal. Qatar were dreadful.
Yeah, agreed.
They were really bad. Senegal, I don't think were great, but Qatar were dreadful.
Yeah, I agree completely. 2-0 Senegal.
I'm going to go...
Here he comes.
1-0 Senegal.
Oh, he thought about it.
He did.
I did think about the Qatar win. I'll start us off.
No.
Netherlands, Ecuador. I'm going to go 2-1 to the Netherlands.
Interesting. I've gone 1-0 Ecuador.
Well, this is the group decider, right? This is yeah. First and second. So
I wasn't impressed by Netherlands, and I think because they won, I don't think there'll be that much of a pickup in quality.
No. I will go... I was so impressed with Ener Valencia. I really was. Mm. But I'm going to put it down to how poor the opposition were as well. I think Netherlands have got this. JK, what was your prediction?
2-1.
Ah, okay, I'll go 2-0. 2-0 Netherlands.
It worked out for you last time.
The Mr. Jennings 2-0 prediction.
Mr. Jennings starts off England versus the US.
Absolutely brilliant. I cannot wait. It's going to be 3. Will Pulisic do something? Maguire went off and England scored twice in the last game. Real notable performance from Harry Maguire. Gets a lot of stick. I think he's been absolutely brilliant for England, and I think he's on the up again. I think you might even see Maguire score in this game, and I'm going to say it'll be 3-0 England.
Mr. Ferguson?
The only thing I'm worried about is Maguire against the pace of Pulisic. If he gets isolated. But I've still got England down for a 2-1 win.
I'm going to go 2-2. Oh. I do rate the US in attack. They have...
You rated Iran as well.
Yeah, you did.
And let's see. That turned out pretty great. But the US do have more pedigree up front and in midfield. I think Tyler Adams in particular had a really good game against Wales.
Annoyingly, I only watched the first half of that game, so I didn't realise how much better Wales got and how much worse the US got.
Exactly.
I watched the first half and thought, oh, US look like a really good team this World Cup.
They've got two players, the US. They've got Pulisic and they've got Wilfred McKennie in midfield. Mm. They've got two players.
Timothy Weah is very good in behind. Obviously, his father is
the great
George Weah. So.
Legend. One of the best players not to play at a World Cup.
Mm.
Moving on to Tunisia, Australia. Mr. Ferguson.
I've got Australia down for a 1-0 win here. I honestly don't think this game will be that great, but I think Australia have got more quality than Tunisia. I think they'll scrape something from it.
I'm going to go really boring 0-0.
Ah, you took my result. I'm going to go 1-1 then. I'll kick us off with Poland, Saudi Arabia. Dare I say 0-0?
Really?
You can dare say it.
Will I go for it though? I'm going to go score draw again. I'm going to go 1-1 again.
You're going to go 1-1. You want an exciting result? 1-0 Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
I thought Poland were bad. I thought they were really bad. Mm. I think Saudi Arabia, it'll go one of two ways. They'll either have the biggest fire lit under them to kick on from that result against Argentina, which was incredible, by the way. I've got the stats, and we'll talk about the stats later, I'm sure. I don't think Poland will be able to deal with the intensity that Saudi Arabia brought to their game. So yeah, I've got a Saudi win.
Actually, do you know what? I'll join you. I'm going to change my prediction yet again. I'm going to go 2-1 Saudi Arabia.
Oh. Goodness me. Well, I think we're all sort of on the same hymn sheet here. I'm going to go draw. Has anybody got 1-1?
Nope.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1 here. Okay, JK, over to you.
France, Denmark. I'm going to go for a 3-1 French victoire.
Yep, good call. I've got a 3-0. I was disappointed by Denmark, actually. Thought they were going to be better.
I agree, and I think they will be. I think Denmark will win the midfield battle in this game. And it will see... I think it will see another draw, and I'm going to go 1-1. That's going to be my result this week, isn't it? 1-1. 1-1.
Mr. Ferguson, kick us off with Argentina-Mexico.
I've got Argentina 4-1 here. I think they will have had a time in training this week. I think it will have been horrifying what they've had to go through since that loss. I thought Mexico played well, actually. I was really impressed with their energy. But I think Argentina are going to come back with a vengeance.
Yeah, Argentina were lucky in the first game. Lisandro Martinez's penalty should have been awarded. Who on earth? I mean, I've done a bit of football coaching in the past, but who in their right mind selects Otamendi over Martinez in that game it makes no sense. And I don't think they'll make the same mistakes again. I cannot see Argentina affording to lose this game. So I will say that they'll win this game 2-0.
I'll be honest, having watched a lot of Benfica this season, Otamendi is surprisingly composed. I thought Christian Romero was exceptionally poor.
Right.
And I think that Lisandro Martinez and Otamendi complement each other quite well because, differently to how United play, Lisandro Martinez can be the sweeper in the system and Otamendi is the stopper.
Definitely.
So, as I said that, I'm going to go for a 3-1 Argentina victory.
Cool.
Moving on to, I believe, Sunday's fixtures.
Yeah.
Japan-Costa Rica. Mr. Ferguson, get us started.
I've got Japan 2-0.
Yeah,
I like Japan. I don't like Costa Rica.
Costa Rica are the worst team we've seen so far, in my honest opinion. Didn't even manage a shot, let alone discussion around on target or, you know, up into the stands against Spain, who I think were made to look very good. I think Japan have got this as well, 3-0.
I'm going to go 4-0 Japan. Belgium-Morocco, Mr. Jennings?
Belgium, my goodness me, they're lucky. And how on earth Kevin De Bruyne was awarded man of the match in that game is anybody's guess. But they will beat Morocco 2-0.
I'm going to go, dare I say, 0-0. I'm going to go 0-0.
Okay. Mr. Jennings has taken my 2-0.
It's revenge, though.
It is revenge. I completely respect it. I'm going to go 1-0 Belgium then.
Moving on to Croatia, Canada. Mr. Ferguson, start us off, please.
1-1. Canada are a good underdog team. Croatia are a bad overdog team. I think it's going to even out.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I'm going to go... Will we see goals? I'll go 2-2.
I'm going to go 0-0. Yeah, again.
We've got such great expectations for that match.
I'm going to start us off with Spain-Germany. I'm going to go for a 3-1 Spanish victory.
Yeah, this is the fixture that gave me kittens on the predictions this week.
This is the fixture of the whole group stages, isn't it?
It is. And it's interesting the timings that this match has come. Spain off their 7-0 Costa Rica, I think, will let their levels drop a little bit. Germany off their 2-1 loss will pick their game up. But I think Spain have got enough. I think we're going to see a shock Germany exit in the group stages.
I'll throw the Germans a lifeline.
2-1 is my score, by the way.
Sorry, 2-1. Yeah, I will go the opposite. I will say 2-1 Germany. I can't see them being as bad or Spain as good.
Group G and H, Cameroon, Serbia, Mr. Jennings.
Samuel Eto'o's not going to think very highly of me, but then again, saying that he thought Cameroon would get to the final, I thought was ridiculous. So I think we'll sort of just dampen that a little bit further, and we'll say that Serbia against Brazil. I mean, the Richarlison goal is, the second goal is fantastic, but you know, a competent centre back, as soon as he has that first touch, just takes that straight away from him. Let's be honest. So I think Cameroon could get something here. I think they could get something, and I will say that it will be a draw, 1-1.
I'm going to go 2-1 Serbia.
Here it comes. Here it comes. It's a 0-0.
I was going to go 0-0 as well, but then I changed it. But Mr. Ferguson, South Korea against Ghana.
This one I've got... I realised in my predictions last week I didn't really have any shocking results, and I think that cost me a little bit. So this is my shocking game, at least. I've got South Korea down to win this 4-2.
Wow, that is a prediction and a half. And I like what you've done there. I like what you've done. I think Ghana will beat South Korea 2-1.
I'm going to go 3-2 Ghana.
I'm suddenly very nervous about that now.
I'm going to kick us off with Brazil, Switzerland. I'm going to go for a 4-2 Brazilian victory.
Wow.
Mr. Jennings?
1-1.
I've got 3-1 Brazil.
Straightforward.
Yep.
Easy. Mr. Jennings, Portugal, Uruguay.
This is a tough game to call, I think. Uruguay were better than the 1-1 sort of suggested against Korea. I think this could be the draw for Portugal in this group as well. I'm going to go 1-1 again. 1-1 again.
I've got 1-0 Portugal, as we say goodbye to Mr. Jennings.
I shall email you my further predictions, sir.
Brilliant.
Before this goes out, I promise.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings.
But yeah, I'm looking at this, and it's a tough game to call, to be honest. I think that Portugal probably got slightly flattered by the result. By the result against Ghana. In terms of their national team pedigree, they've got lots of really good players, but they don't seem to gel that often. And Uruguay they were fiercely combative against South Korea. But I don't think they've quite got the goals in them, personally. So that's why I've gone 1-0 Portugal.
I'm going to go 2-0 Portugal on this one.
Okay.
I think Jean-Felix will score. I thought Rafael Leão took his goal really, really well. If I'm Fernando Santos, am I dropping Ronaldo for Leão? Probably. I think that Leão gives you speed, power in behind. I think Jean-Felix took his goal really well. Bruno Fernandes getting 2 assists as well. Who said he can't play in a team with Cristiano Ronaldo? Pundit, sit down. As I clatter my elbow into the backboard. Let's go in more depth with the performances from your notes.
Yeah, so like I said, the notes I've got for Qatar Ecuador actually were not extensive. It was just that Qatar improved in the second half, and Enner Valencia was very impressive. I think if he is actually injured coming out of that game, that will be such a huge loss to Ecuador, and I think they'll really struggle for the rest of the tournament. Because he was so crucial to everything that was good about that team. Senegal, Netherlands, I only watched the second half of. I thought the general quality of football was pretty poor. I'm going through all of these in group fixtures rather than in terms of date use, because that's how I've ordered them in my little OneNote, because we are a Microsoft Showcase school. I thought the general quality of football was pretty poor. All told, I thought that Netherlands were lucky to get the win based on the quality of their play. But I think Senegal can't feel bad about losing that game because they were so wasteful with the chances they had. They had some really good opportunities throughout the game and really good positions, and they just kept on giving the ball away or making really poor choices. So I don't think Senegal can feel aggrieved that they lost this one. And I will also say that I've got a note in this, because this was the fourth match that was played, I think. And was it the fourth match that was played? I think it was.
Yeah.
At this point, I'd noticed there was a general trend of poor goalkeeping letting down lower-ranked nations. the Qatar match, there was some dreadful goalkeeping in that. The Iran match, of it, consolations, obviously, for the horrible-looking injury that their keeper suffered. And what on earth the medical team was thinking, letting him play on even for 2 minutes after that, was absolutely dreadful. It was a shocking decision. Everyone in the stadium could see that he didn't stand a chance of carrying on. So what they were thinking, maybe it was pride, maybe they were trying to make it look like he was a tough warrior carrying on, but it was a dreadful decision all round. It shouldn't have happened. I was worried that he was just going to completely collapse after that. And it's I'm very grateful that he didn't. So I can't be too harsh on their substitute keeper, but he wasn't great. The two keepers in the USA-Wales game, from what I saw, were... I'll be honest, didn't really have that much to do. I think Wayne Hennessy made a couple of saves in the first half. But I think there has been a general trend of there being quite poor goalkeeping from the lower-ranked nations. I wonder if that's a coaching thing. I wonder if that's just a quality thing. But I feel like it's been better in previous tournaments.
I just think that it's mid-season World Cup. Quality of teams, obviously, we don't have Colombia at the World Cup. Neither do we have Chile or Peru, the South American staples. I just think it's due to the quality, really. Mm. Any other notes from games you watched?
Other notes. So I watched the I watched the England-Iran game. I actually thought that although England did play very well, I thought before they scored the first goal in each half, I thought their play was actually quite slow and unfocused. I thought they were quite slow to get started. I also thought the refereeing wasn't great in that game. I felt like it really slowed the game down notably. I there's been a lot of injury time in this tournament anyway, and I think that's good. I think it has actually clamped down a little bit on the time wasting that's going on. Dare I say, it even enhances the case for the 60-minute play clock. But I did think the refereeing slowed the game down a little bit there. And like I said, I thought Bellingham was incredible. He was absolutely everywhere, doing everything and doing it really well as well.
I was going to say, he reminds me of a throwback to the classic number 8, and I don't mean Premier League number 8. If you cast your minds back to the early to mid-2010s, Serie A had a few good box-to-box midfielders. Mm. I remember the two mohawked individuals of Nainggolan and Vidal.
Oh.
And young mohawked Pogba as well.
Yeah.
At a point. And
I think that's a vital position in modern football. I'm surprised there aren't more people in Bellingham's mould, because so much of this play is about midfielders dropping into help defence and pushing up to help attack. So I'm slightly surprised that teams quite often opt to have a defensive midfielder and an attacking midfielder. I think you kind of need that box-to-box player, which Bellingham is, and which he was, granted, against opposition that wasn't great. But he was so good. He was absolutely incredible. He's probably added another 20 million onto his valuation. Just from that guy, I really do think that, because he's shown up in a big moment and absolutely dominated that match. Now, I think Dortmund perhaps have a tendency to sell low anyway. I mean, Christ, they could have got so much more for Haaland.
Release clause.
I know. I think it was a dreadful release clause. But I don't think Bellingham's is that low, if he has one. I do think he has one, but I'm not sure what it is.
I think it's more of a Sancho-esque gentleman's agreement. Obviously, United signed Sancho for 75 million. Dortmund won 120 the summer before. We finished second. United finished second in the league, and we got Sancho for 45 million cheaper. So who knows? Glazer masterstroke, perhaps.
Maybe, but I think Bellingham's going to absolutely shine this World Cup.
Wonderful player. I think Enzo Fernandez is that another kind of box-to-box midfielder at Benfica. Having watched quite a bit of El Glorioso this season. Really good on the ball. Got an absolute pelter on him as well from outside the box. Speaking of which, Casemiro's shot against Serbia. Did you see it?
I didn't know. Brazil-Serbia was one of the matches I didn't watch. I only got to watch four matches in their completion, to be honest, and I got to watch three other halves of football. So there's a big stretch of them. I think it was the stretch from Tuesday to Thursday morning that I didn't get to watch any of those matches. So I missed all of the, I missed most of the excitement, to be honest. I missed the Saudi Arabia and the Japan upsets. I missed the Spain thrashing. I'd have loved to have watched that Belgium Canada match, even if it wasn't actually very good in the end.
I'll be honest, I was watching that game and I genuinely don't think I would have awarded anybody man of the match. I think.
Oh, that's promising.
Genuinely, I wouldn't have awarded anybody. I thought Davies was okay. If you're going to give a man of the match, you could have probably given it to Davies. Or actually, Canada's left centre back, Kamal Miller. Dare I say, he's got a little bit, he's got something about him. Left footed player, doesn't come out of a challenge. Yeah, I thought he was really good.
Mm.
Apart from that, I'll be honest, I do think Portugal have another gear in them. I think the defence, I would have probably brought on Antonio Silva instead of Danilo because Antonio Silva is a natural centre-back, although he is 18, going to be 19. Cancelo had a relatively poor game.
I've seen people saying that, yeah. And I've seen people saying that Cancelo had a really bad game. Did the other City Portuguese player have a
Bernardo
bad game?
Bernardo Silva, yeah. And Dias. Bernardo Silva, as much as I watched him for Portugal, he hasn't really impressed me all that much. I think Portugal, one football had it down as a 4-4-2 central diamond with Bruno Fernandes, Neves, Otávio, Brazilian turned Portuguese, with Bernardo Silva in behind Felix and Ronaldo. I think Cancelo and Bernardo Silva don't work as well in the Portuguese team because of the system that City have created, which has enhanced both their contributions. And it comes down to the debate between system and player, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
And they're absolutely incredible in that City system because they spend all year and they've spent a few years now getting drilled in that system by one of the greatest coaches to ever grace the game. It probably does make a difference because that is such an idiosyncratic style of play. It probably does mean that when you try and transfer to something like Portugal, which is not really so much about open flowing play, it is quite difficult to transfer over. You know, once you get used to doing something a particular way, it can be really difficult to snap out of that again. You know, you see it in, for example, Harry Maguire, who is much more comfortable in the England system than he is in the Manchester United system, because the England system, I think, is closer to what he was playing at Sheffield United when he was developing. I think that's why he seems to do better there than he does for Manchester United.
No, I'd be inclined to agree. I think he works better in a deeper block. He works better when he's the left-sided centre-back rather than the right-sided centre-back because he likes to dribble into midfield. I would also say that if I'm Portugal, I'm looking at Rafael Leão off the bench, and I know I've mentioned this time and time again. He is genuinely a world beater. I think he has, dare I say, Kylian Mbappe potential, if not more. I think he's more powerful. He's taller than Mbappe. He's about 6'2". If he gets his heading on point, he's really quick. He can finish. He's got a good pass about him as well. I thought he was amazing. So was Vinicius Jr., actually. Vinicius Jr. was really, really good. I thought Rodrigo was really good. And ultimately, Brazil brought on Rafinha came off. Antony, Rodrigo. Who else did they bring on?
I mean, they've got such ridiculous strength and depth, haven't they?
They brought a Fred for Paqueta. Casemiro had a wonderful shot. So I think middle, just outside the box, he walks onto it, curls it, and he's walking away thinking he's scored, but hits the top right of the crossbar. I think a lovely curling effort. Our viewers at home, listeners at home rather, probably seen it. It was a great strike, and I think Casemiro was again, hands down, one of the best players in the
league. I think he had something like 17 forced turnovers in midfield. That's an ungodly number, especially in a World Cup match as well, where teams are more likely to try and just hold on to the ball for long spells.
I think Brazil dominated the second half. I think Chicho got his tactics absolutely right. I do think that Neymar could have been a bit more clinical. His heavy touch led to the Vinicius Junior shot. Richarlison rebounding. I think Richarlison was fantastic. Showed everybody why he's starting ahead of Gabriel Jesus. I wasn't particularly pleased with Rafinha. I thought Rafinha was very, very poor. Trying to cut in. He had the shot where Vanja Milinkovic-Savic, who actually was signed by Man United at one point. But couldn't get a work permit. Younger brother Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. He's 6'8", one of the tallest goalkeepers. So I was really surprised he didn't. So he passes the ball to Pavlovic, I believe it is. Rafinha nicks the ball in. He's one on one with the goalkeeper. Neymar's to his left. He can square it, and Neymar's a tap in, and he tries to go to the goalkeeper's near post, and Vanya Milinkovic-Savic, being the absolute titan he is, saves it with his knee.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to do that to a 6'8" goalkeeper, you've got to really know what you're doing. If even if he's 6'3", you stand a better chance of being able to go near post to a goalkeeper who's, you know, you're running in on the angle, and you're opening up. He is left-footed, Rafinha, isn't he?
Yeah.
So having it on your natural foot, but you're naturally going to hit it with bend away from the keeper if you're going for the near post. So it's going to start closer to him. So you've got to really know what you're doing.
And again, Milinkovic-Savic was probably one of their best players. Obviously, his older brother Sergei playing in midfield for Serbia as well. I was surprised they didn't start Vlahovic and Mitrovic, although having seen the second half where they had almost no possession, I thought Brazil were fantastic. So this is probably a good place to wrap up this episode.
I do just want to quickly say I was so deeply impressed. I want to make a comparison quickly. I was so deeply impressed by Mbappe for France. I thought it wasn't just that he played so well. I thought that it was... He had so much joy in his football. All the little flicks, all the runs, all the challenges, you know, the shots he was taking, I thought he was incredible. But it was striking watching that and watching the first half of the Mexico-Poland match with Lewandowski, who has previously been, you know, the best striker in world football. And Lewandowski just... didn't look like he was. It didn't even look like he really cared, and that was surprising for me. I've seen the penalty that he missed as well, although I didn't watch the second half. But I thought Lewandowski was just so isolated in that match, and that's why I don't fancy Poland against Saudi Arabia, because I didn't actually. When you see teams play badly, sometimes you can go, okay, but I like this bit about them, and if they sort this bit out, then, you know, then they'll improve. Or sometimes, you know, you look at, for example, Germany against Japan. I didn't watch, but you look at them and go, well, they've got so much quality, and I trust their manager. They'll be able to come back from this. But I looked at Poland in that first half, and I couldn't actually see how they were going to cope. Saudi Arabia will play in a very similar way to Mexico. They will absolutely harry them. And I think Poland are going to have a really bad time at this World Cup.
I agree. There you have it, guys. Another episode of O Jogo Bonito. Thank you again to Mr. Ferguson and Mr. Jennings. And do stay tuned. We might have a few watch-alongs coming soon. Thanks, guys. Peace.